Our reading this morning is by the poet and the agronomist, farmer Wendell Berry. I go by a field where once I cultivated a few poor crops. It is now covered with young trees, for the forest that belongs here has come back and reclaimed its own. And I think of all the effort I have wasted and all the time and of how much joy I took in that failed work and how much it taught me. For in so failing, I learned something of my place, something of myself. And now I welcome back the trees. Not too long ago, I heard someone say that they make 6 mistakes a day. It reminded me of the Red Queen, who says so tartly to Alice in Wonderland that she has sometimes believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast. Why 6, I wondered, even as I began to mix the phrases and decided it was okay to make 6 mistakes before breakfast. I held on to the phrase and I tried it out with my kids. And this was at a time when they were much smaller and when our mornings were particularly full. They started particularly early, and there were so many opportunities for mistakes, for doing it wrong in ways like choosing the wrong bowl color or the wrong breakfast cereal or putting the wrong breakfast cereal in the wrong bowl color. So there were a lot of opportunities for the morning to go astray right from the beginning and not stay on course. So on one of these mornings, I tried to adopt a very casual tone. I said to my kids, as they commented on something I had done or something I had not done in error, I said, you know, I make 6 mistakes a day. And they said, what were the other 5? That made me laugh. I thought it was my first mistake. I thought I have 5 more to go. Thought I was doing pretty well, honestly. But I have to laugh at myself here because I really have spent so much time in my life trying to get it right, which is good and worthy. Trying to do it by eliminating all normal sources of human error with systems and lists and practice and planning in pursuit of this imagined perfection or ideal. I have done a lot of things, I could say. Even though I know intellectually that that ideal is unattainable, I know that it's culturally determined, I know that it's significantly flawed. It has a lot to do, honestly, with all sorts of supremacy and superiority cultures of which I want nothing to do. Yet it's still the water I swim in, with a lot of companions, all of us chasing that idea that if only I could get this part of my life under control, all good things would follow. And until that day goes the lie, I have only myself to blame for that gap between what I wish for and what is actually happening. Well, the singer and poet Joss Stone takes a different approach. She tells us, got a right to be wrong. My mistakes will make me strong. I'm stepping out into the great unknown. I'm feeling wings, though I've never flown. So this morning, I want to talk with you about a soulful kind of wrong. The kind of wrongs that make us strong. The kinds of mistakes that lead us more boldly into uncertainty and the unknown. The wrongs that remind us of what another poet once called las alas perdidas, our forgotten wings. So the first kind of wrong I want to talk to you about is the wrong that is not really wrong in a moral or legal sense, and not even really incorrect, but it's wrong because it's non-conforming. In the history of Unitarianism in England, for example, our churches in the 1600s rejected the governance and other aspects of the Church of England, and they were later labeled non-conforming churches. This stance restricted our congregations from many aspects of social and public life. They lost status and power because of their position. They were on the wrong side of the Church of England at that time, but but they followed this path into a different way, a different truth, a different life together to create the kinds of congregations that we have inherited today. In a less political example of non-conforming wrongs, I remember the first time we handed my son an ice cream cone. He was probably about 3, and he was pretty excited about this new treat. And then he looked at it for a minute, and then he decided to take a big bite out of the side of the cone, which was really not going to work out logistically. I mean, you really can't eat the ice cream cone from that side, but I just never seen anyone try that. It was kind of a thing that was going to continue with my son, in fact, as he'd broken through my expectations in a delightful way. What else might he come up with that would shake me out of what I thought was the best way, the only way, or the right way of doing things? So I think it is this kind of wrong, this non-conforming wrong, which disrupts what is expected, which shocks and delights us, that helps us remember that something else is possible. Something else is possible. And this is what the scholar and cultural critic Jack Halberstam writes about in his exploration of queer identity and countercultural narratives of failure in his book called The Queer Art of Failure. In his studies, Halberstam rejects the idea of queerness as failed or unsuccessful, mistaken masculinity or femininity. Instead, he explores how narratives of queer identity and narratives of failure both create what he calls powerful alternatives to the dominant narratives of mainstream culture. It is the non-conformity at the heart of what he calls the queer art of failure that allows all of us to imagine more liberating ways of doing and being for ourselves and society. Halberstam writes, "The queer art of failure turns on the impossible, the improbable, the unlikely, and the unremarkable. It quietly loses, and in losing, it imagines other goals for life, for love, for art, and for being." This is so provocative to me. It expands my world because Halberstam does not value failure as a landmark on a path to success. Instead, failure is held up on its own as its own path and its own tool for imagining what is possible, what is different about the way things could be. So the second kind of wrong I want to talk with you about today is the kind of wrongs that really can't be avoided or prepared for or planned away. These are these incorrect, inaccurate wrongs that come about because of what the scientists call human error. And they try, and trying to avoid them is kind of like trying to say that you're not going to be human anymore. This is a category into which you may wish to put any very memorable argument that hinges on facts that can really be proven and about which it is later proven that you were wrong. Perhaps going south on the highway when your spouse knew it was north and they were right. Perhaps knowing for sure that that company sells underwear, not shoes, but it actually sells shoes. Or in the case of Catherine Schultz, a journalist who explores error in her book, Being Wrong, Adventures in the Margin of Error, arguing that Orion is not a winter constellation when Orion is, in fact, a winter constellation. How can we absorb these embarrassing instances of taking the wrong side in a minor, often totally meaningless argument, and winding up with the intellectual equivalent of a parking ticket? This is a proven instance in which you were not only wrong, but you were caught in the wrong. Schultz takes pains to describe exactly what it is in us that leads us into error. It is because our brains have to make conclusions from tiny amounts of data. In order to know what we know about the world, we really can't build foundationally from truth to truth to truth, from provable to provable to provable, using what would be called deductive reasoning. We really have to use one or two instances to build a whole universe of information, much of which will be false, but some of which will be true. Our mistakes, Schultz writes, are part and parcel of our brilliance. They are not the regrettable consequences of a separate, deplorable process. Our options, she says, are not careful, logical reasoning through which we get things right versus shoddy, inductive reasoning through which we get things wrong. She says our options are inductive reasoning, which probably gets things right, and inductive reasoning, which, because it probably gets things right, sometimes gets things wrong. Believing something on the basis of messy, sparse, limited information is how we err, but it's also how we think. What makes us right is also what makes us wrong. In other words, being wrong sometimes is the price we pay for being right sometimes, and it can't be totally avoided. Instead of considering my mistakes to be grounds for dismissal from the human family, should have tried harder, should have done a better job, I can try to consider them an ever-present reminder of my solidarity and kinship with so many other error-prone beings. I make 6 mistakes a day, I might tell you, and I'll hold out my passport to be stamped with today's examples, like a visa giving me reentry to the country of everyone. Maybe someday I will get so comfortable with my ordinary human wrongness that I will apply for legal permanent residence. Maybe there's even a path to citizenship for me. Rather than thinking of myself as someone who doesn't really belong here, maybe I should never have left the island kingdom. I will call it Harvard University, where we were always right, often harsh in judgment on ourselves, and often lonely. Here I am trying this on, this path into an unknown realm of shared vulnerability and weakness and humanity. That's what it feels like. Sometimes the Lord comes to us disguised as embarrassment. The poet and priest James Carroll once wrote in his Catholic Christian idiom before he left the priesthood to become a writer and a husband and a father of 2 children. My mistakes make me strong, Stone sings. Could it be that the strength she speaks of is the strength of numbers? Our common humanity revealed in this embarrassing way over and over. Can I move from shame to shrug in the margins of my errors? The third kind of wrong I want to talk about this morning grows from this. You can hear it in the words of the narrator of Wendell Berry's poem, who passed by a young forest growing where he once tried to farm. The farm failed, he tells us. And now the forest is coming back. And I think of all the effort I have wasted and all the time, and how much joy I took in that failed work and how much it taught me. How much it taught me. If you are raising children right now or have kids in your life, you have probably encountered the new education binary of fixed mindset and growth mindset. Is anyone familiar with fixed and growth? All right, awesome. The core idea behind this is that some of us were taught intelligence is something that actually can't be learned. You're either a smart kid or a dumb kid. You are a bluebird reader or an eagle. But our new studies are showing that this either-or approach to intelligence doesn't lead to the positive outcomes we thought it did. The new research shows us that kids who are labeled gifted and talented eventually stop accepting new challenges because they can't bear to make any mistakes. They get anxious because they think that making a mistake means that they aren't smart anymore. And our more typically developing normal or slow kids are hurt here too. Lowered expectations for them lead to lowered outcomes in the zone of the fixed mindset. In contrast, when our kids are taught a growth mindset based on the idea that our fantastic elastic brains keep growing our whole lives, and that mistakes are one of the many ways we know we are growing, they're more likely to be resilient in the face of life's inevitable setbacks. They take more risks in their learning and their growing. And I want to thank again the person who made our altar this morning with the spilled flowers. Beautiful. Perfect. There's only so much we can learn from safety. There's only so much growing we can do without taking new risks, which brings me inevitably to the story of Flacco the owl. Has anybody been following the story of Flacco the owl? Yes. So Flacco the owl, about a year ago, was released from his cage at the Central Park Zoo in New York. This has been covered extensively in the New York Times. He took up residence after that as a free bird in Central Park. A lot of us were worried that Flacco would not survive outside of captivity, where he had been for 13 years, but he did, and he captivated the public imagination. He lived for a year on his own, eating rats and being photographed frequently, and he has his own Wikipedia page now because he is a bird of interest. Sadly, however, Flacco died about a week ago, apparently from a collision with a building while in flight. And there have been a lot of poetic expressions of grief about what his many years at the zoo and his year of freedom symbolized for all of us. Did we fail Flacco by keeping him caged? Did we fail him when we made his freedom unsurvivable in a city that could no longer support his kind of wildness? What might his life and death teach us about our place in the largest story of our lives? There's so much comfort to me in stories like Flacco's that remind me that my mistakes and my triumphs, no matter how important they are to me, are not my whole story, that my life is part of a vast, interconnected universe of other lives and other stories. On this great canvas, some of our personal wrongs must fade away into the background. And I wonder if we could consider how these values that I have spoken about today of non-conforming, alternative ways of doing and being, of kinship and solidarity with the widest embrace of our human and non-human family, how they can give us new tools with which to respond to the wrongs of our own lives and those of the wider world. How can they give us new tools with which to wield our hope that what is cruel and angry and terrible is not the whole story, that the greatest mistake would be to get stuck in our own lives without feeling my connection to all that is. So today, this is my prayer. May some wrongs lead me to laughter and a shrug rather than shame. May some mistakes help me imagine other goals for life, for love, for art, for being. May some wrongs bring me further on my path to citizenship in the country of humanity, turning my fixed mindset towards growth, turning me again and again toward that which is living and rising and risking and changing. May I too move beyond my cage toward freedom, not once but many times, and find my way to the field where the new young trees are growing, where our spirits take flight on the wings of a love that will never let us go. May we be the ones to make it so.